Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Tonight, we're going to be discussing hospice, a particular case, and our guest is going to be Terry LaPointe from Real News Spark, and Terry is one of the best writers going out there. Just does absolutely excellent work. And before we get to her, I've been asked to again repeat about this S-591, this bill that's supposed to be saving the elderly and blah, blah, blah. And to talk about that bill again, the bill does nothing. It absolutely has no teeth. It is not going to do anything at all whatsoever. It was put out there to placate everyone. I know a lot of people are cheering and, oh, isn't this wonderful? I don't know what you think you got because you got about four pages of nothing. The bill does not cite any crime. It does not cite any corresponding law that would have been broken. It does not create any new law that would be violated. There is no prosecution. There is no enforcement. There is nothing. And then it goes on and talks about they're setting up this guardianship council and this guardianship resource center, except all of that was mandated under the Obamacare health insurance thing back in 2009 or 10, whenever that was. And it's supposed to have been done 10 years ago, and of course they never did it. They never set up this council or this hotline or anything else. And their claims that the federal government does not collect statistics on guardianship abuse is kind of thrown in the toilet if you consider the Government Accountability Office issuing these reports every couple of years on guardianship. Somebody's collecting statistics, and they're fidgeting with them also because they keep reporting it that it is family members who most often, and we know damn well it is not family members. It is a rare occasion. It is a family or community member, although those are the ones that mainstream media will report on, but they will not report on these professional predators called guardians, for-profit guardians. And how do they profit? They buy, sell, and trade you and everything you own. This bill will do nothing to correct any of that. It goes on in there, and it talks about how that this council and this hotline, grants would be available for this. Now, you have to understand what that means. That means that the federal government is not sponsoring this, and it is not funding this. There's no funding for this. So you can apply for a grant, a public benefits grant, or maybe a couple other grants to fund your organization if you want to set one of these up. There again, it'll be like the Committee on Aging. It'll be non-regulatory. The most they can do, if they do anything, is make recommendations that nobody has to follow. So this is all an exercise in futility. But I know it made a lot of you jump for joy. You thought you were getting something, and a senator talked to one of you, and a senator talked to another one of you, and you got starstruck, and you didn't read that bill. You didn't read it. And what you did read, you saw what you wanted to instead of what was actually there. And I can't support these bills. I will not support them because they don't do anything. If they did, I'd be right on board with them. But until we see a bill that comes out that criminalizes, in plain language, criminalizes what these predators do, what these attorneys do, and how they are culling the elderly, and they are stealing estates, and the abuse, the neglect, the psychological torture heaped on people, and when they get them to a certain level, they send them to hospice to have them finished off. And this is what we're going to be talking about tonight with our guest, Terry LaPointe. Terry, welcome to the show. Terry's not talking. Hello, Terry. I don't think we can hear you. I don't know what's going on there. We'll try that again. We're going to try and have her hook back up and see if we can't get this rolling. We've been having trouble with our audio here, but we'll get it straightened out. But let's go back to these bills again. I'm surprised that people didn't look at this for what it was and object, but they did not. Let's see if we got Terry there. Hang on, Terry?
Hi.
There, we
Hi,
got
can you
you
hear me?
now.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay. I can hear you, but I don't know what
Yeah,
happened.
did we
Thank you.
it
Thank you
isn't
for having
yeah,
me.
it isn't Oh, I'm glad to have you on. Thrilled, actually. Terry, you wrote on this Marion Leonard case, which is what I'd like to kind of concentrate on tonight, because you, for one thing, you did an excellent job of telling this story, what happened to this lady. But what happened to her is happening far too often on a daily basis across the country as the elderly are culled out of the population. They're being euthanized. And I don't think anybody can deny that or say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory and all of that. I've got over 400 cases sitting here that have been sent to me of people who were put into hospice. They withheld food and hydration immediately and immediately began drugging them. And eventually, within a few days, usually 4 to 5 days, they're dead. And so this is what we're going to be discussing. Now, Terry, how did you come across this story to begin with?
Back when I was writing for medicalkidnap.com, the daughter, Nancy Scott, contacted us and asked us if we would look into this. And we have
Okay.
stayed in touch. I had actually covered the story last year. It's been almost a year ago that we reported on the story then, and it got so much worse. And Nancy and I have just stayed in touch. She's in my own state, and we met and talked several times. I've gone to see her mother. I've talked with many of the people who knew her and would and caregivers and people who would visit her. So as far as articles go and stories, I've probably investigated this more deeply than most of the articles, simply because of the
Okay.
proximity.
Right. Right. This was
So
just.
it
Go
just kind
ahead.
of fell in my lap.
Yeah. How did she get targeted? I know she was over 100 years old. How did she get targeted by these people? I mean, was she ill? Was she, what happened?
In the original story, the daughter had talked about how several years back, her mother had gotten some people to help her get her finances in order and all of this, and there were people that looked at her finances and saw what she had, and were there was a it was a crazy kind of story then, where they were looking at the fact that she had all this property, and it looks like they were trying to get a hold of that property back then. So there
Yeah.
were a couple of times where, over the years, where someone would try something. There was she was ordered to have a psychological evaluation done at some point, and she went into this was the mother, and this was like, I know who's behind this. This is crazy, and I'm not playing your little game. And she left. And she wasn't crazy. She wasn't mentally ill or anything, but she was on somebody's radar.
Yes.
So she was old. She had no terminal illness, no disease other than she. Well, it wouldn't even call it a disease because her daughter had it and has it, and several other people. It's a enzyme deficiency where they have a hard time processing. Their body can't process a particular enzyme, and if they avoid
Okay.
certain things, then that they are fine. The daughter has the same thing, and
Okay.
it's not an incurable. I mean, it's not her. Well, maybe incurable, but it's not anything that would lead to anybody's death. It's not terminal at all. She
Right.
had nothing
Right.
that was terminal. She had, there was
Okay.
nothing that was terminal. And that's what is stunning to me is that they were able to put her on hospice. I looked up the requirements for hospice, and as the general public believes, the hospice is for people who are at the end of their life. And that's what
yes.
it's supposed to be for. I did not realize before that it's only supposed to be if you have been diagnosed with a terminal illness, and you are expected to live no more than 6 months, and
right.
you agree to be in hospice care instead of choosing treatments that might cure you or lead to
right.
your recovery, and it does not mean that you're not treated for other things that are not life-threatening. So if you have a urinary tract infection, that's still
right.
supposed to be treated. So
okay.
none of these criteria were met in this case. None of them.
All right. Okay. Well, see, and we find that in almost every hospice case that we've dealt with, either a fraudulent statement of a terminal illness. We've found several people where that has happened and managed to get them out. And then people that weren't under a guardianship don't seem to know that where that facility is supposed to have a revocation of hospice on hand, and you can revoke it at any time. Either the patient themselves can, or if they've got someone has a power of attorney in, you know, for that person, they can do a revocation of hospice, and that's immediate. And so there's things people don't know about this system. Most people think when you get into it that's just a closed door, but it just depends on the circumstances. But where this lady had a guardian, that guardian is the one who could have revoked hospice and didn't. And but this is just and this hospice thing, they get. Go ahead.
She said to her daughter when they put her in this nursing home, she said, "You've got to get me out of here. If you don't, they're going to kill me and then they're going to kill you." That's what she
yeah.
told them. That is very clear. She wanted out.
Yes.
When I went to visit her, the very first time I went to visit her, she said, "I want out of here. Get me out of here. Where's my daughter?"
Oh, wow. This is going to be. Can you imagine, Terry? Can you imagine what the feelings, the terror this woman knew what was happening? She knew what they were going to do to her, and being helpless to stop them. Her daughter
she
being
was
helpless
being
to stop them. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I have records that show that in 2016, okay, we're 2019, so this was only 3 years ago. So in 2016, she was examined by a neurologist and another doctor at Emory University Hospital in Atlanta for signs of dementia or Alzheimer's. And 3 years ago, at the age of 100, they said, no, there's no sign of any of that. So
wow.
a year later,
yeah.
they're saying she has this. I don't
right.
think that just makes the whole thing very
right.
questionable, raises
well,
red flags.
One of the things that happens to elderly people, and the doctors will not test for this, even you can stand and scream and jump up and down, and it's a simple thing, and checking their B12 levels. A lot of times in elderly people, what they think is early onset dementia is actually a severe B12 shortage, which will cause short-term memory loss, it'll cause confusion, it'll do all kinds of things, and they can test for that quite easily. And even if it comes in on the low range of acceptable, start those B12 shots or a sublingual B12. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to totally recover and be like they were before, but you'll see a marked improvement. But they won't test for it. There's no money in it. And they don't want these people to continue on. I mean, it has become readily apparent. They do not want these people to continue on. I had a discussion today with a lady here in town whose mother is showing, and she said they were already recommended putting her in hospice. And I said, here's how this is going to go. And I explained it to her. I said, then they're going to tell you, after they've drugged her so much, I said, that she has dementia and she has forgotten how to swallow. And she kind of looked at me and I said, it's the drugs. It stops the reflexive action that normally would occur when you put food or liquid in the mouth. And I said, but it makes those, that reflex action is tamped down. They can't do it. I said, then in, with the lack of hydration, the tongue is swollen. I said, and the, your tongue goes down your throat quite a ways, and it's hardened. And I said, and the esophagus starts to swell and harden. And I said, so it makes all of this difficult. And I said, but this is how they're going to do this. And I said, don't let them put her in hospice. And to have to tell people that, Terry, you know, and I pointed her towards your article on my site and also towards your news site and about this. Who's laughing?
Oh, that's in the other room. They're watching, my family's watching TV. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. It's all right.
I've got the door closed. Sorry.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with the family having fun. And this, you know, I don't even know what to do anymore, Terry. We have screamed about this. You've written about it. Gretchen Hammond has written about what they're doing to people in Michigan. I mean, we're hearing it from all over the country. And this is, this was just one of the most cold-blooded stories I'd heard to absolutely say, well, she's old. She's old. So we got to get rid of her.
I was stunned when they told me that. I mean,
yeah.
I really was trying to give these people the benefit of the doubt. And what for the listeners, what we're talking about is the Guardians. People that worked with the Guardian had come out to the prayer rally that we had outside of his office, and they were kind of trying to figure out what we were doing, and also, so we were kind of talking to them at, like you would talk to any normal human being on the street, that you would like, okay, we're going to give you the benefit of the doubt and assume that maybe you don't realize what is happening here. So we were explaining that she had no terminal illness. The only diagnosis that she has was a fraudulent diagnosis written by somebody who wasn't even a nurse or we don't know what she was actually. She signed on something as an ER nurse and something as an employee of the nursing home and an ambulance company all in the same day as if she were an employee. And she was the only one who wrote on the paperwork that Ms. Leonard had end stage Alzheimer's, and that's the only place that had ever been written. So it was written by someone who was later convicted of Medicaid fraud in Tennessee.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only place that this diagnosis happened. So we're explaining this because, as you and I both know, the families rarely get a chance to present their side in court when it goes to court. So I always assume maybe the judge just really doesn't know what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've never seen the evidence. Maybe this guardian has never seen the evidence. Maybe his coworkers have never seen the evidence that I've seen. Maybe they just don't know. We were giving them the benefit of the doubt and saying, and Nancy had said she didn't have a terminal illness. And this lady, this young lady, she may have been 30, and she just says, but she's old. And we both looked at her and said, and Nancy wanted to clarify, are you saying that because she's old, that's a reason to put her on hospice? And she's like, well, yeah. She later did try to backtrack, but she flat out said because she's old, that's reason to put somebody on hospice. And that doesn't fit the definition. And, you know, and we talk about the term stealth euthanasia, which I think is a brilliant term. It's very descriptive. Mm-hmm. However, when I look up the term euthanasia, the painless killing of a patient suffering from an incurable and painful disease or in an irreversible coma. Okay. This woman did not have an incurable or painful disease. She was simply old. So this doesn't even fit the definition of euthanasia.
Right. And you're exactly right. And, you know, but it does get down to dollars. And, you know, I've said many times on air, under Obamacare, hospice got an $11.5 billion, that's with a B, dollar infusion of cash to go from Good Samaritan to Grim Reaper. And they make big bucks doing this. I don't know how many sociopaths or psychopaths there are walking around among us, but apparently there's quite a fair number. I can't imagine, Terry, taking on a job where I knew I would be spending my days doing slow kill murder, and then going home like nothing, you know.
Like nothing.
But like I say, there's big money in this. They make $29,712, I think it is, a month for terminal care patients. But now see, if what they do is they get them out of there in 5 days max, maybe seven. They start that drugging, the starvation, the dehydration, and then they take them out quickly with the kill shot. And that's one half pure morphine mixed with Haldol or Seroquel or Zyprexa, which, of course, within a very short order, shuts down any responding systems, any, you know, your heart, everything shuts it off. And this is not painless. This is not painless. This is a very, very painful process, but the drugging keeps them from crying out loud. It keeps them, it's the same thing, it's the same as an execution in the prisons, but not near so merciful. Because
that
they do it over
my next
days.
Question I was going to ask you.
Yes.
Is how does this compare to what they do to in execution? Is literally the same drugs?
Well, what they do in execution, and there's I don't know how to say the name of this. It starts with a P, and it's one of those words I can't say. But it's a drug they give them that's a paralytic in an execution. That's why people think they're laying there all stoned and they don't know what's going on. They are very aware of everything. They cannot respond to anything. They can't blink, raise their arm. They can't do anything. And then comes lever number two, where we start administering poisons. And then the final hit that takes the heart out. This all happens over about 7 minutes. Considering what they're doing to people in these nursing homes, where it can go days or maybe even weeks, where they slowly put these people to death, starve. I can't imagine. Dehydration is a very painful process for the body. Within 4 days, your organs start shutting down. This isn't a pain-free experience. It's quite painful. The longer it goes on, the worse the pain becomes. So they add more drugs to keep you quiet. And like I say, then what they do is they'll tell the family who keeps saying, you know, what's happening? What happened? What happened? Well, they've got dementia and they've forgotten how to swallow. No, quit giving them those drugs.
That always seems ingenious to me. How do you forget
yes.
to swallow?
You don't, and that's their new cover line, though, and it's being parroted in every clinic across the country. They forgot how to swallow. The other thing they'll do is right towards the end, they'll come in and turn that elderly person, or even if it's a disabled person they're euthanizing, they'll turn them on their side. There's a reason for this, and it isn't because they're afraid they're going to get bed sores. They turn them on their side because it impairs their breathing. And it causes pain. And, of course, at this point, they'll say they're in pain. You don't want them to suffer, do you? Do you want to see them suffer like this? Let us put an end to this for them. And, I mean, it's really sick. The thing they do to the patient, if the family isn't around. And, by the way, anybody who's in hospice, under any circumstances, the family has the right to be there 24/7. They cannot make you leave. And, but the other thing is they'll go to the patient when they can get them alone and go, don't put your family through this. You've had a long life. It's not fair to them. You don't want to make them suffer watching you, do you? You need to let go. And it is this psychological torture that goes on both sides of this that, you know, I mean, shades of Hannibal Lecter. This callous, cold-hearted, almost a mockery, and yet they do this every single day. And then the nurse that comes in and gives what they call the kill shot. Who is this person, and why would you do such a thing? Who made you God? Who are you to decide that somebody's life isn't worth living? They're disposable. They're expendable. We need to get rid of them. I'm doing everybody a favor. And that's really the attitude many of these people have. I'm doing all of you a favor.
I remember years ago, I had a friend who was a nurse. And when my grandfather passed away from, he had gotten pneumonia. He had Alzheimer's, but he was in the beginning stages of it. And he had pneumonia. And he died not long after that. And this nurse friend said, well, you know, in hospitals, they call pneumonia the old people's friend. And I thought, what? And she said, because they die from that, and it's usually pretty quickly. And I thought, why? That doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, because they don't treat them. And that's why the infection is allowed to just go rampant. And eventually they get to where they cannot breathe at all. And if fever doesn't kill them, the level of infection will.
They talked the other family members into, they said, well, he needs morphine to help him because he's in pain. I was like, he wasn't in pain. He just wanted that catheter out because he had never had that in his entire life. And so, yes, he was agitated, but he wasn't in pain. But my mother said, and she didn't know. And my mother's credit, she had no idea. She said, well, please, you know, help him not to be in pain. And they gave him morphine. And within, I mean, it wasn't long. I mean, I was less than half an hour. He was gone. I think it was more like 10 minutes. He was gone.
Well, morphine, one of the reasons it's such a deadly medication, what it does is it impairs the lung function so that the exchange of carbon dioxide and oxygen doesn't take place. And eventually the lungs get there. Again, we stop the reflexive response of the lungs. It's just like people, they can pump their lungs full of air, and the lungs will still squeeze down, even if they're unconscious, even if they're in a coma, and expel that air. You can pump them full of air again, they'll do the same thing. But with morphine, that doesn't happen. Morphine is a deadly, deadly drug, and it's also highly addictive. But eventually, over time, what it does is it stops the lung from functioning at all, which is why you're not supposed to take it long term. Never more than 7 days, and I wouldn't even take it that long. But this is why they give it to them. But people need to know, these people in hospice that they're euthanizing, this is not some sweet, wonderful thing you're doing to be merciful. These people are in pain from what's being done to them. This slow, excruciating death that has been caused by the people you think are there to take care of them. And they're not. These are killing squads. Like I say, Terry, I don't know where so many of these people came from that have no sense of empathy or sympathy, no compassion, no regard for the fact that that is a human being.
Yeah.
And they've decided, along with the doctor, who probably has never seen the patient, that, and do you know that for end of life, do you know that the way that reads in hospice is that futility of care can be called for by any doctor? Any doctor. In other words, they can call a doctor over in Barfarkle, Egypt, and they can say, yeah, it's a futility of care, and it goes into effect. And what we're finding many times, the doctors who give these orders have never seen the patient, never looked at their files. They're on speed dial, and they give the order to go to futility of care. And see, what nobody will admit is it is the institution, the hospice facility, that created the conditions necessary to call utility of care. Then they take you into palliative care, which they call pain control. No, it has nothing to do with controlling pain. Palliative care is slow death. Now it's a matter of days. Once you go into palliative care, it's a matter of days. You know, I do that show with Marcia Joyner every other Wednesday on hospice, and that's all Marcia addresses is hospice. And they euthanized her mother, and this is how she got into it. But the stories that have come out of that, Terry, and everything is documented. We don't do anything that doesn't have documentation. The stories that have come out of that will absolutely scare you to death of what's going on in these hospice facilities and the callous disregard the people that work there, the nurses and whoever else, have not only for the patient but for their families. It's just, it's frightening. I just, I don't know
how
to tell so many people to do it.
Wow. And I don't understand, the, even with in this case with Marion Leonard, how they can say, okay, you've lived over 100 years as with a good relationship with your daughter, and you put her on your documents and all of this, but all of a sudden now this 100-year-old woman, the child that you gave birth to, you can no longer see this child. This child is no longer allowed to visit you, and I cannot comprehend that. If there had been a crime committed, that might be different. If she were a mass murderer, to say, okay, your kids can't visit you. But you know what? Prisoners have the right to have visitors, and they're not, their families aren't kept from them, even when they've committed terrible crimes. So just because you're old, they can make this decision for you. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
This is what I've told a lot of people, and I've said it on air sarcastically, but I'm about half serious. If you're in danger of being guardianized, go out and rob a bank and then turn yourself in.
Wow.
Yep, because in the prison system, you'll get three hots and a cot. You'll get medical care when you need it, dental care when you need it, and you'll be much better off. You can have visitors. You can have phone calls. You can write letters. And
you can even get a college degree.
Yes. So, you know, if you think there's a chance you're going to be guardianized, I say go rob a bank and then just turn yourself in. And you'll fare much better, much better. And but this whole system is so sick. It's so sick, and it's going on across the country. Did you see Gretchen Hammond's expose on Michigan?
No, I heard her speak a little bit about it in Washington, D.C., and I have that's on my to-do list to look into everything that she has written, because
She's got a five-part series out on it. It's quite lengthy and detailed, but she lays it out. There's no denying what is going on, and that what she has exposed there, Terry, is the system that's running across the country. And this guardianship, and it's considered the fastest growing cottage industry in the country. And this is not by accident. And people keep asking why the federal, they just came out with that S-591 and companion bill in the House that does absolutely nothing. Nothing, 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 and more nothing. And everybody's going, oh, we got another bill. You got a bill that did nothing. This was a bitch slap. This was basically, we don't care. We're not going to change this system. They want rid of anybody 60 and older. I thought it was 70, but it's more like 60 and older. They want rid of them because
60 is a new 40. But there are people at 60 running around. I mean, just that's not even remotely old anymore.
But Jerry, the thing is, people 60 and older are the biggest, number one voting bloc in the country, but far more important, they did own 60% or 73% of all the real wealth in this country, meaning land and investments and all of that. That was 10 years ago. 10 years later, it's down to 45% or somewhere right in that area. That's how much has been taken from them. They got targeted. We are targeted. This is an age-based targeting because it's likely that you'll have assets, you'll have investments, you'll have savings, you'll have a 401k, a pension account, you're up for Social Security. So they've monetized us. And this is, you know, how many of these people, like we got that one predator running up there in Detroit, that Mary Rowan, she's an attorney, 1,700 clients, wards. 1,700, think about that. All of them on Social Security and or VA and or military, railroad retirement. She takes all, she's the assigned payee on all of their benefits. She gives them $44 a month and installs them in one of her residential homes that has never been inspected. you take this money, and you know, and a friend of mine out there in D.C. said, look at this in the local economy. In the local economy, just one person can be worth over $1 million a year between the guardians getting paid by the state and feds through cash incentivized programs, the nursing homes, hospice, the probate court. All of these people are making money, whether it's directly from the victim that they've targeted or it is through these cash incentivized programs and block grant money and all of this. But that one person can generate over $1 million a year for all the people that are preying on them. And it just,
So it's not unlike what they do to just children with Child Protective Services and the foster care and adoption industry. There's a lot of parallels here.
Yes. Well, there really APS are. Was actually predicated upon CPS. CPS was started in under Dole in, I think, 1984, 82 or 84, but I think 84. And it quickly was realized that this was a real money-making scheme. And once they monetized these kids, they made it very lucrative to be a foster parent. They made it very lucrative to do forced adoptions. You know, and they all run on a quota system. They have to file a intent for the next quarter of how many people they think they're going to bring through the system, and it has to exceed the previous quarter by 6 to 8%. So they have to fill that quota, or they don't get not only their bonuses, but they don't get the funding they got the quarter before. So they have to fill that quota, and that quota keeps increasing quarterly. And so this is why you see kids just randomly snatched all over the place. These people are looking for money to pay for the administration of the agency they work for and their bonuses. Those bonuses are big. And forced adoption pays really big. And collecting the DNA of kids, another bonus. I say we've been commodified, monetized and commodified. And they have figured out how to make money buying and selling us.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I never thought I would come to this point in my life where anything like this could even be remotely possible. I go back always to... Yeah, to when my granddaughters were in high school, and I got into it with one of her civics teachers, the youngest ones, about she didn't like the conversations I was having with Brianna here at home. And she said it would help if I didn't have those conversations because it conflicted with what she was trying to teach in civics. And it occurred to me that, yes, and I told her,
she needed a civics lesson herself.
Well, I told her, I said, the next time you're going to talk about world government and don't you want to be a global citizen and all of that, you remove my granddaughter from the room. And don't you ever tell her again that the Constitution of the United States is irrelevant. It was a founding document and it was important in its time, but it's no longer relevant. It is archaic. Because I said, I will rip your tongue out of your mouth. And what occurred to me driving home that day was – they don't want us older people talking to these kids. And the reason they don't is we remember what it was like before things got like this. And they want these kids to grow up believing that it was always this way. It was always this way. And no, it wasn't. And I think that's what scares so many. I think that's why so many people that are advocates and activists are all older people. It's because we remember it wasn't always like this. And they don't want us talking. They don't want us telling these kids anything. They don't want that generational knowledge passed on. They want you to be quiet and go with the flow. And I think that's a lot of what's behind all of this. But the other part of it is that we have been determined to be disposable since we are no longer productive, as they say. And they can't tax us anymore. For most of us, they can't. They have no use for us, so we shouldn't be drawing air. And they always painted that we're using up resources that these young people need. Why we're using up resources. Well, that's kind of the way of the world. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is just, but I want to know
what it
is. I
think God created the resources for us to use. I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah, but they're trying to convince these younger people that there's something wrong with us for not doing the right thing and just offing ourselves and making room for something else. I don't know how we got here. I mean, I look at all of this weird stuff that's happened, you know, over the last 20 years in particular, and how we've been led down this path to where the public either refuses to accept that this is going on, because they can't believe it, most people can't, or they adopt the attitude, depending on their age, well, what did you expect? You know, you can't work anymore. Why should you be taking up space? And they do it incrementally so that you become conditioned and you get used to hearing it. And so when we see bills come out like the ones in Connecticut and Oregon, making it law that you can starve the mentally ill or those with dementia to death. I mean, think about this, that you can starve people to death because they're not what you think they ought to be. And nobody said anything, Terry. I mean, there was just nothing. Nothing.
Wow.
The state of Washington comes out and passes a bill that they can compost dead bodies now. It's not enough to disrespect people while they're still alive and determine them to be of no value. But now even in death, let's throw them in a compost pile and you can buy that as part of our biosludge program and fertilize your yard and fields with it. I mean, what the hell's going on?
It all sounds like bad sci-fi movies. And the thing is that so much of what's happening in the sci-fi stuff is really, truly reflecting what's happening, but we don't see it. We don't recognize that that's what's happening.
Well, everybody keeps talking about that movie that was out in the 80s called Soylent Green, where due to overpopulation and food shortage and all of this, they started putting out these green wafers for everybody. It turned out that it was where they euthanized or people willingly walked into this thing and got killed. And then they ground them up and made these wafers out of them. And they were feeding them back to the public. And it's like a bad dream come true. I don't think we're far away from that. We've got Nestle and other companies using human diploid cells from aborted fetuses as flavor enhancers in things like mayo and ketchup and Pepsi.
Injecting it into our children and in vaccines, and we're calling it public health. Whereas you can't do this without thinking that there's going to be some kind of consequence. It's not even logical, but it's happening all the time. People are still stunned. They can't believe that there could be they could be actually using these, but it is happening and it's documented.
Yeah.
I know that the last time I looked, it was on the CDC website, and it is happening. But I think the vast majority of the public just wants to just watch CNN or the entertainment news and not think about and not even acknowledge that any of this is a possibility.
Right. And that's, you know, something, I guess part of this is my age also, but you know, I remember the 60s and 70s, and college campuses were hotbeds of protests and activism and everything else. But you don't see that kind of passion today. Haven't seen it for a long time. It's just not there, this lack of awareness of anything that's going on. I don't know what to actually lay that off to, but there is just a lack of anything. You know, you can't come out of that age and not make the comparison, because this is where a lot of change occurred. Is how we stopped the Vietnam War, was the college protests. Kent State was a big one, and that was our first experience with people being shot down by the police for no good reason. And then that was followed, I think, by Waco and what was it? The Weaver family up the Ruby Ridge.
Mm-hmm. Ruby Ridge.
And yeah. And he finally won his lawsuit against the government. But it's just, I don't know. I don't know where we go from here. I don't know what we do. It's pointless. I've told people, although I truly appreciate the opportunity to go to D.C. and speak out there. I think it's important to all of this for us to be able to speak there at the summit. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, the federal government wants rid of us worse than anything in the world, more than anybody. And they want rid of us because it gets back to Social Security, to institute Obamacare. They took $716 billion out of Social Security to finance that, to set up those healthcare exchanges. No way to pay it back, never intended to. They've been taking the surplus off Social Security since the Johnson administration to finance the Vietnam War, and they've never shut that off. They keep taking it. We have 11 trust funds supposedly, but none of them are functional. All of the money collected for a trust fund like Social Security or highways or airports or anything just simply goes into the IMF World Bank as a designated revenue stream. They just, where this money came from, but there is no trust fund. That's just that name exists, but there is no fund there. Everything goes into the general fund. And then we have to issue a letter of special drawing rights for the IMF to issue, like, checks for Social Security. But they owed right around $4 trillion. But I saw recently, I believe it was on Forbes, where the estimated debt to Social Security by the federal government, which is called an intragovernmental liability, meaning the government owes it to a program they stole it from, is actually around $10.7 trillion. And so their answer, their response to this is to get rid of the claimants and cut benefits. But there's no intention to stop taking money from that fund. And I don't know what we're going to do, but we got a federal government that is the culpable party here. They're not about to change this system. So who do we go to? How do we do it? And how do we get our money back? You know, I just don't, mm-hmm. I don't get it. But
the money for some of the money for taking children, even if the Social Security funds Child Protective Services and adoption and foster care and all of that as well. So I don't know how many people in the general public realize that this is coming out of Social Security money.
No, actually, I need to interrupt you there. Title 20 is block grants. And that includes, in that lot of money they give to each state every year, millions of dollars for elderly care. Of course, it doesn't go there because the block grant goes directly into the general fund. But that block grant money is funded separately from Social Security, as is child support, Title IV, and Title IV-D, all of that. $1.5 billion here 3 years ago, they borrowed, and they were saying, we had to borrow $1.5 billion to keep Social Security solvent. No, you borrowed $1.5 billion to keep the CPS, Child Support Recovery Program going that you're administering through Social Security. Now, why are either of those items, either Title IV or Title 20, in Social Security? Because these are not in the enumerated powers of the government to do this. And this is, they needed a valid agency to install these two programs into. And then they turned around and said, Social Security is funding it, but Social Security isn't funding it. This all comes in as separate funding, but they charge it off to Social Security as far as the public goes, because that serves a good purpose. Then they can go around and say, look what Social Security is costing us. Social Security itself today, even in this economy, is still producing a surplus. And any surplus on any program running at all is immediately seized by the Fed and blown on something else. Anytime, you know, anything produces a surplus, it never stays in the program it was collected under. It's gone immediately. Immediately. So, but yeah, you'll find a lot of things are stashed into one of the things they're doing right now. I don't know if you know about non-positive code and title. And this is a... If something is non-positive, it means that it was a law passed or an act that they tried to put into place, like agriculture is one of them. The federal government it's not in the enumerated powers, and the federal government is not supposed to be involved in agriculture. So they have issued what's called non-positive code, and they can cite that as existing, but they cannot use it as evidence for you having committed a crime because they have no right to be in that business anyway. So what they're doing is they're taking that code apart piece by piece and stashing parts of it into other positive code. And so that they can say, well, it's legitimate under this one, even though it's totally unrelated. This code is positive. And we put it over here, so now it's legitimate. But this is what I'm saying. Nothing means anything. The law only applies if it can be used against you, but they never find themselves doing anything wrong. No matter what they do, it's not wrong. But everything you do most likely is. And it's just this trickery that goes on in government. The smoke and mirrors and nothing appearing or being what it appears to be. There is more corruption, discrimination, fraud, waste, and abuse going on in these federal agencies than in the entire rest of the country in the public sector. It is terrible, terrible what it's costing us for this to continue. But one of the things I say they are trying to get rid of is the older population. Now, combine that with the vaccines, which I believe have one intent and one intent only, and that is to create infertility. Our birth rate is down to 40% of what it was 10 years ago. We are not producing enough children to replace the people dying off. And yet the rate of elderly deaths has spiked tremendously since the inception of Obamacare. Why? Well, because of this hospice thing and the euthanizing the elderly. But they are thinning out the population. And thanks to vaccines and genetically modified foods and herbicides and pesticides and whatever they're spraying us with and the fluoride in the water and all of this other stuff, we now have a whole generation of kids coming up that they call gender confused. But basically what they're talking about is exactly what they were after, a non-reproducing population. And, I mean, you see, this was no accident. This was no accident. They got what they wanted. They estimate now that 60% of the new generation, this youngest generation, is gender confused, meaning they're not going to reproduce. And so, there's just...
They're saying, say that percentage again?
60.
Is gender 60%? Wow.
Yes. This is why, Terry, 10 years ago, a friend of mine who's gay said she really took exception to the fact that they were in elementary school talking to these kids about being gay and, you know, and all this stuff. She said, I don't think they should do that. Why would they do that with these small children? And I said, to condition them. I said, they know what's coming. And I cited all the things I just told you. I said, what's happening is that I think it's in, I can't remember which month the sex of the child is determined, but all of this, like these vaccines contain this hormone inhibitor that either stops conception or it interferes with the gender identification that happens during the pregnancy. And I said, this is what they intended to do. So I said, you're going to see in 10, 15 years a massive explosion, particularly in males, of not being sure of their male identity. They're going to be gay or, you know, transgendered, whatever. This is what's going to happen. And sure enough, here we are. None of this, I don't believe any of this was an accident. And it was intentional, and it was to create a non-reproducing population, or so limited in its reproduction that you didn't have to worry about it. More people would be dying, which is where we're at now. More people are dying than we are producing. And lysae, there's no accident. It's no accident. But I don't know. With this thing with hospice, going back to that, you know, considering the pain and suffering they cause these people, I just think it would be more merciful to, you know, shoot them in the head, get it over with. And I don't think we're far off.
Don't give them any ideas.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. What do you got up on the agenda next? What are you going to be tackling next?
I'm working on an article that exposes some statistics that I found rather stunning. And
okay.
So your audience can be kind of the first to hear about what I found. And this was actually in preparation for meeting with some senators in Washington, D.C. This summer to talk about defunding the Adoption and Safe Families Act, which
yes.
is huge for the financial incentive to steal children, really.
Yes,
so,
yes.
And some of these are statistics that I've cited for a long time and that are stunning. And then I found one other statistic from a government website that put it all into perspective, and it's shocking.
Okay.
So according to the federal AFCARS report from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, less than 16% of children who are taken from their homes are taken for any kind of abuse, that whether you're talking about sexual abuse, physical abuse, whatever. It's less than 16%. Yet, and we know that children in foster care are more likely to be raped or molested, abused, or killed than
right.
if they were left in their own homes, even if those were even if it was a troubled home. Now,
right.
according to the Children's Bureau Child Maltreatment Report that reports to Congress every year, only 17% of the allegations against parents are substantiated or indicated.
And
what I've learned after years of investigating this is it really doesn't take much to substantiate this stuff. They can just a social worker can just decide to write that it's substantiated, and bingo, hello, it's substantiated. There's not been a court hearing. There's not been evidence, and exonerating evidence was ignored. Lies or hearsay can be admitted as evidence, and all of that. So all of that going in, and still they only managed to substantiate 17% of these allegations. Now, these 17% of the allegations may be, it doesn't break it down into how many of the parents this is talking about. It could be one allegation per parent that loses their child, but it could be one parent that loses their child has 10 of these substantiated allegations, or two, or five. It doesn't say. So,
right.
So the working assumption would be that the 17% of the allegations that are substantiated are dealing with less than 17% of the children and parents that are involved here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You follow me?
Right.
So it's 17
okay.
is the maximum. Okay. According to the Department of Health and Human Services AFCARS report, 23% of the children who are taken from their families are eventually adopted out to strangers.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jiminy. I don't even know what this is. Yeah. And they get a bonus for this.
Yes.
They get a bonus forcibly adopting these children. And, you know, I've seen some reports here and there, Terry, where, you know, they're going after these CPS workers for fraud and, you know, perjury and everything else. But it's not enough. It's almost like sacrificial lambs to appease the public and think something's really happening. Why aren't they going after the people top. The people that put this in, and didn't this come in, the SAFE Act come in under the Clinton administration?
Yes. Oh, yes. 1997 under the Clinton.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This was Hillary used to allude to as how she helped families. She was very proud of it in her campaign.
Yes.
How she helped families. She helped families, honestly, could not survive much more of her help. So.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. It isn't that the truth? Go help somebody else and leave us alone. Yeah, I noticed
if
that woman always constantly.
If that's what you call help, please don't. I mean, and we know they go after hurting people. So, I mean, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
But
yeah.
See, and then it's
and
like.
Just to let you know, just to make this clear, I have no thoughts of suicide. I'm not suicidal, never have been. So, yeah.
Yep, same here.
Since we're discussing
if I disappear, somebody took me.
Exactly. This was under fraudulent.
You know,
and if I die on a jogging trail, you know, come looking.
Yes.
That's not going to ever happen.
Exactly. I don't know how many bodies have to be stacked up there. But it just, you know. And you point this stuff out to people. You take them right to the Title IV and show them the circumstances, the financing, the money to be made in doing this. And they'll still go, well, I don't believe this. I don't believe it.
Well, but I know this one kid who really was abused. And I mean, Joanne is a foster parent, and those kids really were abused. I'm like, were they really? Or is that what the social worker told you?
Yes, yes.
And that's a valid question. And, you know, if you're going by what the social worker told you, you're probably being lied to. And the kids may actually end up believing that, and I've seen this happen, where the kids actually believe that they really were abused when they weren't, because it's framed that way. They're like, well, they didn't love me. They didn't come and try to help me. They didn't try to come and get me out, when they're doing everything they can to try to get the kid out. But if they say anything to the kid in a visit, the visit's over. So
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
But see, the gospel that I read is about redemption. We should be working with families to redeem them. If there's a problem in a family, we shouldn't just take them out and execute them. We should be trying to see how we can help them to overcome that and get better.
Yeah. So. But see, there again, Terry, the mainstream media will report, like, if a parent actually does abuse their child and they get there, they'll blow it up. You'll hear it for days on end. But when these CPS workers abuse that family, with these false charges,
that doesn't
and
go
rip these children. No, they won't cover that. No. And we see the same thing with guardianship abuse, and this is what I said at the beginning of the show. They'll jump on, if it's a family member or community member, they'll jump all over that. And that'll be in every newspaper and on, you know, cable news and everything else. But these professional predator guardians and attorneys, not a peep. It's a rare thing we get any media coverage, and then it's very limited, and it's off and on and goodbye. And but usually the story gets shot down before it can ever come to production. They'll get work from up top that no, they can't do it, and then no reason given, we can never ascertain, but they can't do it. I know with this show here, my show, there's been several attempts over the years to take me off air, and but one of the things is, like I say, we document everything, and I've always got a backup of laws and you know, funding and this and that. So where am I lying? Where am I, you know, spreading hatred and or doing something else? And when they can't pinpoint anything, they have to back off. But it's just, I don't know. And you know, this is a thing too, Terry, just like with social media, you starting your own, you know, website there and everything, mine that I've had running for a few years, they take them down. I think what social media did that they never intended, because they wanted it to be, you posted what you had for breakfast and where you were going today and who your friends were and who you're in love with, and it's supposed to be all this la-la stuff. But instead it became a vehicle for reporting what mainstream wasn't reporting of these things going on.
Right.
you know,
right.
out of the public eye. And that was never, so we're all fake newsers. We're all fake
mm-hmm.
news. We're conspiracy theorists. We're, you know, tinfoil hat wearers. And we're all these names. But the thing they never say is that we're wrong. They never say we're
wow.
wrong.
Wow. Now, I have been accused, and I don't know if you've been accused of this, of saying, oh, this is a one-sided story. And
yes.
to which I say, absolutely, it is not. Never are
right.
these one-sided stories, because when I am investigating, I'm looking at the court records, I'm looking at the medical records, I'm looking at all the things, I'm seeing what the allegations are. Those things are heard in court. All of the allegations
yeah.
are heard by the system. All of the accusations, that's all what the, that's what that side's the, and usually that's the only side that is heard in court, because the other side, the exonerating evidence and the family's side of it, their explanations, all of those things are never heard in court. And so I
right.
am reporting what their side is, backed up with evidence. And then I get accused of saying that this is one-sided. And I think it's trolls, really, honestly, saying that because
yes.
they can't think of anything to say. Because I know what the allegations are. And, I mean, when the allegation is something absolutely ludicrous and ridiculous, and I can go through, you know, in 5 minutes, find the proof that the allegations
right.
are absurd, and I've got evidence that it's wrong, I don't feel the need that I necessarily need to talk about that allegation, because it's
there
absurd. It's ridiculous.
Right. Well, and you're absolutely right. And the other thing is, too, trolls, let's talk about them for a minute. This has become
oh, okay.
big business.
Yes.
It has become big, big business. Now, we know the Pentagon hires banks of people to keyword. And if you, like years ago when we were first writing about depleted uranium, the use of depleted uranium in the Gulf War, which they denied, and they did not, and that was conspiracy theory. And there was this one guy named Roger Halbig that had come after you with fangs bared. Turns out Raj was a paid troll. And but there are a great many people who do this. They do it for a living, and some people even do it for fun. And like if you print anything about vaccines, I think anybody is foolish to take a vaccine of any kind. Whatever it was intended to do is going to take second or third place to what it's actually going to do. And the vaccine trolls mm-hmm. will come out, and they're vicious. And these people, they start
mm-hmm.
out and they're antagonistic, and they quickly become profane, and they are on the attack, and they become extremely aggressive. And their whole function is to discredit you, stop people from looking at the information you put out there, and derail the whole conversation so you don't talk about it. And the other thing that
mm-hmm.
it does is people become so afraid of these people showing up that they won't post anything. And, you know, that's what the delete button is for, folks.
Right.
Block and delete, you know. Get them off there.
Well, there was an article that I had posted earlier even today, and I saw the what do you call it? The the words were escaping me. The fact checkers. It was related articles underneath an article that it was actually the other side of a story of something that we hear all the time. And so I like looking at the other side. I want to know what both sides are. I really do. And so but they posted related articles, and I clicked the button that I didn't want to see those, and they said, why? And I said, well, let me tell you why. I said, my investigation into facts does not always agree, Facebook, with your so-called fact checkers, which would more
yes.
accurately be called agenda monitors. Leave off this
yes.
garbage and let me investigate things posted by my friends. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
I know Facebook came after me last year, and with a warning that I was violating their policies. It didn't say what policy. And it was just a warning. And I shot back, and I had just had somebody send me a friend request. And I always check each one of those to see who it is and what they're doing. And here it was this chick who had her naked behind pointed to the camera with everything God gave her showing, with this really obscene title over across of it. So I sent that link to them, and I said, I violated your policies, but this doesn't. And I said, and also the BBC just did a big report on you. You're one of the biggest purveyors of child pornography in the world. And that doesn't violate your policies? I never heard another word from them. And so it just, you know, that's the whole thing. This censoring, what was it here, Facebook and
it is
Twitter.
It is censoring.
Yes. They took down 800 sites. One of them, the Free Thought Project, that reports on police brutality across the country, among other things. And but they had over 4 million followers. Took them down. I mean, they took over 800 sites down overnight. Boom, just gone. And then Twitter did the same things, took out 600 accounts. No warning to anybody, because they don't go along with the national, you know, the government narrative on what they want you to think. I think when they start censoring, it's a clear indicator that you're too close to the truth. And
well, you know, when I was in school, I remember I was telling my daughter this about just earlier today, that we called that propaganda. We had talked about the propaganda of China, communist China, and Russia, the Soviet Union. That is the terms that we used it in when I was in school. We thought of that, and we thought, well, thank God we live in America where we have freedom of speech and freedom of the press, and we can find out information and all of that. And, you know, lo and behold, we have Facebook where we can learn and we can share different information and all of that. But yet now we find out, and even our president acknowledges that things are being shut down and people are being silenced and their voices are being silenced. I don't have a problem with somebody speaking a view that I disagree with. What I have a problem with is silencing them. Let me decide who I want to talk with and interact with. I don't have a problem with people having other perspectives. I think we need to have other perspectives. We learn.
Yes.
There's an issue. I'm pro-life. I'm about as pro-life as you will get. However, that being said, I have friends who are pro-choice, and there are things that I have heard some of them bring to the conversation that are things that we need to consider when they talk about, hey, this may be going too far on this or that. These are sometimes legitimate concerns, and we need to hear each other. They need to hear my perspective, and I need to hear their perspective. Because when we just assume that because somebody has the opposite opposing view, that they are non-human, they are not worthy of sucking air and breathing the same air we breathe, and they are just horrible, and we should beat them up because they have on a certain hat or have this or that or whatever. Where have we gotten to as a society? That because we have those kinds of mentalities, we have the mentality that says that we can get rid of inconvenient people like our elderly or our disabled.
Yes.
It goes together.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is, you know, I've had people say to me, you know, Marty, I don't agree with you. Now, don't get mad. I don't get mad. I don't want to talk to people, Terry, that agree with everything I say. Because if they do, there's no point in us talking. And aside from that, I would find them excruciatingly boring if they did. And I don't need that. I do like a good debate. I do like, if you want to call it an argument, but bring your information, bring your documentation.
And
I've had
it. Respectful. Let's honor and respect each other.
Mm-hmm.
Let's honor and respect each other.
But and it's just like,
and
this
we can
coming
do
election.
That. It's possible.
Yes, but we are being trained not to. And this is what I've told other people. I don't see the November 2020 election taking place. And if it does take place, by any chance, it'll either be stopped or be declared void, or some other way it will be upset, because they are trying hard.
Wrong.
I do too, but I what they're trying hard to do is pit the public against each other, which they've always done to one degree or another. But now it is in an advanced stage. If we don't continue fighting and attacking each other, we might stop and pay attention to what they're doing, and they don't want that. And they, it's very necessary to keep the public divided. I see, I just, one of my writers just wrote recently about a statement he had come across, and it was on a Health Ranger article. And he said that blanket statement that was made in there, Marty, just absolutely upended me so bad. And he's a Republican politically, but he said the statement was, we all know that Democrats hate Christians and conservatives. Say what? And the thing is, a lot of people bought that. And we've seen conversely, the other side, you know, Republicans hate Democrats and Republicans are all Satanists. Are people really that stupid that they buy this stuff? And I think the answer is could be.
Unfortunately, yeah, the Kool-Aid comes to mind.
Yes. And but I think they're going to try to either start a civil revolt this next spring or summer. I mean, an outright Canada just declared all these white supremacist groups as terrorist groups. I don't know how that's going to work out.
White supremacy is bad. I don't disagree. White supremacy is a bad thing.
Yes. Yes, I agree with you on that. I don't hold with that at all.
But just because you vote for Trump or like President Trump does not mean that you are a white supremacist. Because I personally love our president. I have a great deal of respect for him. And I don't buy a lot of the and so we can still have a discussion and not hate each other.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, exactly. But, exactly. I voted for him. I did vote for him, Terry. But I voted for him. It was a protest vote because the idea of Clinton getting in there absolutely terrified me. Having followed that woman's career for 30 years, no. And so for the first time in my life, I voted Republican. This last little election we had, it was state level. I got to City Hall to the door, and I could not bring myself, for the first time in my life, could not bring myself to walk in there and vote. I thought, I can't do this. I cannot do this. I cannot be forced to vote for people that I have absolutely no faith in, do not trust. I'm not going to be forced to do this. And somebody said, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. Not voting is my complaint. It wasn't an act of laziness. I have a history of voting. Wasn't an act of laziness, but I refuse to be faced anymore with unqualified, sometimes absolutely horrendous candidates for office and being told I have to pick from one of this collection of whatever they are. I can't do it. I'm a political atheist. I don't believe none of them. I keep saying if sound is coming out of their mouth, your mouth's open and sound's coming out, they're lying. And most generally they are. And you know, just like people in these MAGA hats, get a hat that says Make America Free Again. I'll wear that one. I just don't know where all this is going, and I am afraid for all
but
of us.
But if it was, I think that along that line, if it were about, if it seems to be directed at who is saying that, because it represents President Trump, therefore it's bad. And that's a false dichotomy there.
Yes.
And it's not good.
Yeah.
Not good.
No, it isn't. You know, you have to support him because he is the president of the United States, but I don't have to like him, and I don't. I think he's like George Doofus Bush on steroids. He just, to me, this babbling and these tweets and all of this insane stuff that comes out to me is just a terrible embarrassment. I felt the same way over George Bush Jr. Every time that man was going to speak, I just cringed. And then you get these people like Obama that are very articulate and smooth and everything else, and you knew he was BSing you. You know what I'm saying? You can't trust any of them.
Yeah, I mean, really I had a really hard time with him being our president. I really did. But there again, I didn't beat anybody up because they liked him.
Right. And it just, you know, the thing is, we have to be able to disagree with one another without it turning into a fiasco. Yes, if you can't tolerate absolutely. A rational discussion with opposing ideas in it, you have no business being in the discussion. And that's just the way I feel about it.
I agree.
Yeah. You need to keep your mouth shut. If you're so hard set in your ways, there's nothing I could say to convince you anyway. So, that's just where that's at. But like I say, we who report outside of mainstream media, we're under attack. And okay, let's go to Antifa. Mm-hmm. They claim it means anti-First Amendment. That's what it's been co-opted to mean. When it originally formed, it was anti-fascism. And I keep hearing people talking about, it's socialism, socialism. We're going headfirst into socialism. You are so far away from socialism. Honest to God, you are in full-blown fascism, corporate overtaking of government. Everything is incorporated. Everything is run by corporations. You will never see socialism in this country. But that being said, whether it's socialism, communism, socialism, same thing pretty much, or fascism, you're going to end up the same place. You're going to end up with a ruling class, which is where we're at, and the rest of everybody scrounging and living a peon's life. And this is either sales pitch, you're going to get the same deal. It's just which one are you going to buy? And this is a fascist country. This is the one thing that Mussolini, they hung him for there in Italy after World War II because he had done this in Italy. He incorporated everything, turned everything over to these corporations to run what should have been government services. And, of course, they turned on the people and started bleeding them dry, and everybody's quality of life went in the tank. And, but we have a fascist system running. And so all of this screaming and harping about socialism, socialism, how's fascism working out for you? And in fascism, as in socialism, we get rid of those we think are disposable, no longer productive, have no sense of being here because, after all, we can't get anything out of them. And here we go. Here we go. And the thing is, just like with this thing with hospice and everything, Terry, and I've talked about this before, this isn't the first time we've done this. World War II, it was a huge euthanasia operation. They killed somewhere between 20 and 23 million people across Europe. It wasn't just the Jewish Holocaust. It affected all of Europe. More than a million Greeks were killed. They don't know how many gypsies, Christians, Catholics, entertainers, educators, anybody that was old, infirm, anybody that was mentally ill, anybody they just didn't like the looks of, boom, you're gone. Mm-hmm. But just like our own country, before black slavery, there was a 175-year history of white slavery, where England cleaned its streets of beggars and poor people and orphans and brought them over here to work for noblemen that in North Carolina, South Carolina, and what became Georgia. They gave them 30,000-40,000 acre tracts of land, but they had to make it productive, and the Indians were just not at all cooperative. So they started the Crown Shipping Company, started rounding up people and bringing them over here and selling them as indentured servants. They took people out of prisons, and those were sold as slaves. And when England ran out of people, they went to Ireland and did the same thing. Then they headed for France, and France said, if you show up here, we're going to blow you up. So they stopped that, and that's actually when they went to the Bahamas and the Caymans and all of that, and then down eventually into Africa. But we have done this cyclically throughout history. And England bragged after they had cleaned their streets of these waste populations, and that's how they referred to them. They were not productive, and they couldn't tax them, and they shouldn't be there. How the economy just boomed, and everybody was better off because these people were gone. And that's right where we're at again. They are convincing the public, especially the younger generation, that they are better off if these older people are gone because they're using up things you should have. They don't say what those things are necessarily, but there's just things. they're using up resources that you could use, and they don't say what those resources are. It's just that you're supposed to feel cheated. And so you go along with this stuff. And you get conditioned to it so that when it happens close to you, you're, instead of your response being shock and terror, it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, they do that, yeah. Do you see what I'm saying? It's just they condition you. They do it incrementally. And people become accustomed to hearing about it, and they just like, oh, okay, you know, okay. Mm-hmm. Don't say anything. We got about 4 minutes left here, Terry.
Okay.
What do you want to add here at the end?
Actually, what I would like to do is to tell your listeners about a conference that's coming up. If anybody is anywhere around Alabama or can come, we're having a family restoration conference, and we're going to have some speakers talking about things like the guardianship abuse and elder abuse through the guardianship and hospice. We're going to have someone talking about judicial accountability. We're going to be talking about child protective services and medical kidnapping, as well as the shared parenting and the child support industry and all of that. And we're going to be talking about all of these things that impact families. And the subtitle is, it's where Earth's realities meet heaven's truth, because obviously what we are seeing today is not at all what it's not God's plan for family, and families was God's idea. No matter what religion you are, even I think that's throughout most any faith, that family is God's idea, and the family unit is anthropologically and other ways, it's the basic building block of society. So we're going to be talking about these kinds of injustices, and also with the intent of restoring hope among those who are on the front lines of this battle, and talking about how do we get there? How do we fight more effectively the spiritual battle that's at the root of all these attacks? And that's going to be in Birmingham, Alabama on October the 5th. And there's going to be, we'll have that posted on the Real New Spark page very soon. We're working on getting the page up and have that information, and it'll be on my page as well.
Okay.
People can follow me at realnewspark.com or the Facebook page, Twitter, same thing, Real News Spark. And that is for real news that sparks people to make a difference, because it doesn't matter how much we talk and how much we expose stories if the people don't get involved and follow up and do something about it and work to make a difference, nothing's going to happen. I'm not in this for the purposes of entertainment. There's tons of entertainment out there. I want to make a difference, and I think you do
there
too. So I see that in you. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You hit something right there, Terry. I did a show about two years ago with Deidre Gilbertson, who runs National Medical Malpractice Association. And we titled the show, What Does It Take to Get You on Your Feet? I thank you for all the friends and the tweets and the this and that and something else. But if you can't show up, it does no good. We've only got 90 seconds left here. I want to thank everybody for tuning in this evening, and especially you, Terry, for being with us, giving us your time.
Thank you.
Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit, thank you for your support. And we'll be back out there again this next year. And hopefully we can get more range than what we had this year. I mean, we did quite well, but things got pretty hectic. I'm going to have to plan a longer trip. But anyway, Terry, again, thank you for coming on with me this evening. And keep us posted on what's coming up on your news site, and we'll cross-post and do what we can to help get your message out. Again, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Terry, good night.
Thank you. Good night.